Roll call, please.
Trustee Robert Bowie. Yes.
That wasn't me.
Trustee John Butler.
Here.
Trustee Wheeler Coleman. Trustee Wheeler Coleman. Trustee Robert Marshall.
Here.
Trustee Sherilyn Muir.
Here.
Trustee Tim Struthers.
Here.
Trustee James Zayed. Oh, excuse me, Zayed.
Here.
Board Chair Mark Strauss.
Here.
Mr. Blakemore, can you verify that we have a quorum and that appropriate notification of the public meeting was provided?
Mr. Chair, I can confirm that there is a quorum and that the meeting has been called in compliance with the Illinois Open Meetings Act.
So, Trustee Zanaya, if you would join me at the podium, we'll do your swearing in. While your service as a trustee started at the time that you were appointed and confirmed by the Student Association Senate, we're going to take this opportunity to do the ceremony involved. So if you would repeat after me. I, James Zanayed.
James Zanayed.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully serve.
That I will faithfully serve.
Support.
Support.
Preserve.
Preserve.
Protect and defend.
Protect and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the laws thereof.
And the laws thereof.
The Constitution of the State of Illinois.
The Constitution of the State of Illinois.
And the laws thereof.
And the laws thereof.
And the Constitution.
In the Constitution,
bylaws,
and policies
of Northern Illinois University.
Of Northern Illinois University.
Finally, I acknowledge the fiduciary responsibility.
I acknowledge the fiduciary responsibility
that each member of the Board of Trustees has.
That each member of the Board of Trustees has.
And further solemnly swear.
And further solemnly swear.
That I will discharge faithfully.
That I will discharge faithfully.
My duties as a member of the Board of Trustees.
My duties as a member of the Board of Trustees.
Of Northern Illinois University.
Of Northern Illinois University.
To the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And it looks like you have a few words you'd like to say on this event.
Just a few.
Please.
It is absolutely quite an honor to be here today. I'd like to start by thanking Student Association President Lupstein when he appointed me to replace former Trustee Chavez, and I want to give my thanks to the Senate who confirmed me. It's a privilege to serve both the students and the university at such a high level and with such accomplished individuals, everyone in this room as well. I also want to take the opportunity today to commend former Trustee Chavez. She served this role honorably, and I told her that I plan to carry on her goals in representing the students and representing the university on this board. I would also be remiss today if I didn't take this opportunity to thank NIU as a body for giving me all that it has. I met Jen, the woman of my dreams here. I have made lifelong friends here at NIU. I'm going to get the opportunity in the next couple years to see my little brother, Tony, graduate with a kinesiology degree, and my little sister, Christina, graduate with a pre-physical therapy degree. And that's not even to mention the amount of experiences and the 2 degrees that I'm going to leave NIU with after 7.5 years. So NIU has given me so much. And I just hope that I can give back as much as it has given me. And I hope that I at least can chip away at that with this job. Thank you very much, everybody. I look forward to working with you all.
All right, let's turn our attention now to the agenda. After consultation, I would like to suggest that we create a consent agenda that would immediately follow item 8L in the previously furnished printed agenda, consisting of items 9A1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15, as well as University Reports 9B1, B2, B3, B4, B5, B6, B7, B8, B9, B11, B12, and B13. With that modification, can I have an agenda, a motion to approve the agenda? Is there a second? A discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We have four sets of minutes before us today for approval, the first being the minutes for the November 12, 2015 special meeting. Can I have a motion to approve those, please?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The minutes of the December 10th, 2015 regular meeting. Can I have a motion to approve those? Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The minutes of the December 10th, 2015 meeting. Can I have a motion to approve those, please?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And the minutes of the special meeting of December 17th, 2015. Can I have a motion to approve those, please?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries as well. Don't have any introductory comments myself or announcements. I would like to recognize the representatives of UAC who are in attendance today. Do any of you have comments at this time?
Yes, please. Greg Long, Faculty Senate President and Executive Secretary of University Council. First, I'd like to thank the board for their support of shared governance and the work we're trying to accomplish at the university in these difficult times. And as follow-up to the ad hoc meetings from the earlier in the year, I want to say that I do support certainly the continued emphasis on sabbatical leaves. I think they're very essential for faculty and staff. We've made excellent use of them in the past. Would also voice my support for the Office of Assessment and our ongoing efforts to improve and report the student learning that occurs on campus. And then the final point I'd like to make is just as an update on some of our shared governance work relative to the Constitution and bylaws. I've brought that up before. Looking at that as kind of a three-prong issue of dealing with the threshold of the voting for bylaws, dealing with the specificity of the bylaws, and then the overall structure. At our most recent University Council meeting, we did have a second vote on the Article 22 with regard to the bylaws, and we have been able to lower the voting threshold of the bylaws such that it now bylaws changes require the presence of 60% of one plus one of the total voting membership of the council to be available, and to become effective, an amendment must be approved by the greater of A, a majority of the total voting membership of University Council, or B, two-thirds of the voting members in attendance. This particular change will allow us to have much more flexibility as we move forward. So just wanted to give you an update on that. And we will continue to work with the General Counsel's office to make sure that our efforts are in concert with the Board of Trustees regulations and work in collaboration in that regard.
Thank you for your input.
Good morning. Holly Nicholson, Operating Staff Council President. Yesterday, in our enterprise risk management session, Dr. Stone asked us what risks keep us up at night. And there's probably many answers I should give, but the first thing that came to my mind was how frustrated faculty and staff are right now. And I know that most of that can't be resolved until we have an appropriation from the state and news about the budget. And in the meantime, everyone is working tirelessly to keep NIU open and to keep our jobs safe. And we know that Provost Freeman and Dr. Phillips talk daily about salary and vacant positions. But on a smaller scale, people across campus are coming up with creative ideas to help faculty and staff and to boost morale. A recent example is from OSC's Morale Committee, who requested a staff advisor position similar to the SPS and faculty staff advisor position. And this was approved by the president, and we just worked with Provost Freeman this week to finalize the details. The process was collaborative, and it was obvious that the needs of staff were the priority. And similarly, Provost Freeman helped us, and Dr. Phillips helped us work out some support for the staff councils, which includes clerical support and office space. And this will allow staff to participate in shared governance more easily. And we have more ideas coming, and we really appreciate the support. Continued transparency and honesty can only help as well. People often receive budgetary news with little context, and rumors are flying constantly. So it's important that decisions are made that are justifiable, and we continue to communicate about them to the extent that's appropriate and helpful. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Blakemore, is there a single request for public comment
yes,
then?
Yes, there is.
All right. Mike Haji-Sheikh, if you would approach the podium, please.
Welcome to the new trustee. I want to talk about a little bit, couple little quick things. One thing is we never have true governance sharing when you don't have a faculty member of the Board of Trustees, and I want you guys from other top universities in this country do have that. So as long as we do not, us the faculty, do not have a voice beyond a secondary level with a single individual who happens to be the president of the UIC, I mean, the member of the University Council, we are basically not having shared governance, and I just want to point that out. Secondly, I was very concerned about the way contracts have been run in this university, and one of the things I found is that there was an individual, happened to be one of Ron Walter's friends named Jim Hyde, who came in last year, I mean, actually in 2014, with the Bold Visions, and he's like a bad penny and hasn't been able to leave. I found a contract that appears to have been, fixed, to say nicely. He was in the selection for the QBS and RFQ committee. He came up with the rules of how certain contracts were going to be given. And interestingly enough, one of those contracts just happened to be this road that you had to give $550,000 or $560,000 to fix. So if you cannot control how it is done in the way the state has been allocating it, the rules, then you're going to get things like a guy coming in, setting the rules, and then going and being a subcontractor for the architect. Setting the rules and then becoming a subcontractor. He was a subcontractor for Knight EA for doing the core campus project. $125,000 you guys approved last year. He was the subcontractor. He got as much money as the contractor, and another company called Civitas, a guy named Joe Hiruda and Mike Cannon, who are both NBBJ alumni with Ron Walters. They're still here. I mean, they were here till the end of last year. You can't fix things unless you make the rules correct for everybody. The 14 people who, the total people who applied for the core contract, there are 14 companies that came in thinking they were on even footing. And only one contract was given, and that contract was given to the guy who helped write the QBS and RFQ rules. So I think we still have problems, and I think we still need to fix these problems because they are what's going to drag us down. Millions of dollars were spent for nothing. Okay? We built Douglas. We took Douglas Howell. We spent as much money as you do for 5 miles of interstate for that building. And you're still trying to figure out what to do and find budget. So, board, I applaud that's a tough job. I understand. My wife's on the county board. She has a tough job. It's a tough time. The state's got tough times. But, you're telling the faculty that you can't do anything, yet you go off and you spend as much money as 5 miles of interstate. I mean, I just can't. It's hard for me as faculty to understand the logic behind collapsing buildings, laboratories that can't get funding, and we build a road that's two lanes, too narrow, and doesn't line up with the other road. That's ridiculous. Thank you.
Move on to reports of board committees and liaisons. Executive Committee did not have a meeting. The Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee will have a report from Trustee Marshall, please.
Thank you. At the February 18th meeting of the Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee, we did approve eight items which were sent forward to the special board meeting that same day for approval. Those items were a request to delete the minor in dance education, a request to delete an emphasis in non-governmental organization in environmental studies, a request to delete a specialization in rehabilitation counseling within the Master of Arts in Communicative Disorders, a request for a new degree program, the Master of Science in Rehabilitation Counseling, a request for a new school of nursing, and I guess I'll grow my fingernails a little longer. A request for a new minor in business analytics and a new emphasis in entrepreneurship and social responsibility. A request for a new specializations in adult education, higher education, and public service law and management, and recommendations for faculty and supportive professional sabbatical leaves for the 2016-2017 year. There are also three information items presented: an annual report on the outcomes of sabbatical leaves, a presentation from Professor John Briscoe on a sabbatical entitled Crafting Career Interventions for Mid-Career Professionals, and a presentation on assessment of student learning at NIU. Thank you. That concludes my report.
Audit, Risk Management, and Legal Affairs Committee. Trustee Muir, do you have a report?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. Good morning. I'm pleased to provide the report of the Compliance, Audit, Risk Management, and Legal Affairs Committee. The committee met on Thursday, February 18th. The minutes of the November 12th committee meeting were approved. The agenda for the February 18th meeting included both information and discussion items. The information and discussion items included an update on Enterprise Risk Management Initiative by Dr. Alan Phillips, an update on the Governor's Executive Order 1509 and Statements of Economic Interest by our Special Counsel and University Ethics Officer, James Gagliotto. Although no action was requested, the committee was advised of the university's effort to update the university's policies related to constitutional rights, responsibilities, privileges, and obligations. The university provided a summary of the proposed freedom of expression policy. I'd like to give a special thank you to the president for initiating this timely policy review. There were no committee action items taken, and this concludes my report, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. The Finance, Facilities, and Operations Committee, Trustee Butler, do you have a report?
I do. The Finance, Facilities, and Operations Committee met on February 18, 2016, and considered several university recommendations for action. This included the approval of a Collaborative Research and Development Agreement, or CRADA, signed by Fermilab and the university, FY17 Architectural and Engineering Physical Plant Open Order Contract Renewals, the FY17 Document Services Campus Copier Program Contract Renewal, the FY17 Physical Plant Elevator Services and Maintenance Open Order Contract, the FY17 International Programs Division Expenditures, the FY17 Student Mass Transit Board Campus Busing System Contract Renewal, the FY17 Transportation Services, Physical Plant and Finance and Facilities and Operations Motor Fuels, FY17 Non-Food Service Related Commodities, FY17 Student Health Insurance, a Signatory Authorization, the results of the university's efforts to establish differential tuition rates and approval of those rates, and approval of capital projects concerning the East and West Heating Plant, DuSable Steam Vault, New Residence Hall and Northern View Apartments, Gable Hall Roof Replacement, Stevenson Towers A and D roof replacement and the Lucinda Avenue realignment project. We also received three more items that were of an information nature, including a quarterly summary report for transactions in excess of $100,000, a periodic report on investments, and the first iteration of a quarterly financial summary, which the committee is looking forward to receiving on a regular basis going forward. Action items concerning the CRADA with Fermilab, differential tuition, and capital projects at the new residence hall and Northern View Apartments were approved at the board's special meeting held on February 18th. The remaining action items are before us today, and this concludes my report.
Thank you. Trustee Muir, you also chair the Legislative Affairs, Research, and Innovation Committee. Is there a report?
Thank you, yes. On February 18th, the Legislative Affairs, Research, and Innovation Committee met, and the report included four items, three of which were presented to the committee. Mr. Mann provided an update on the very difficult budget situation in Springfield, and I think that President Baker will, in his report, continue to update us. Is that correct? Dr. Quieter's absence, in her absence, Vice President Blasey gave a brief federal update. As part of our commitment to do an in-depth review of research programs within various colleges at the university, we were very pleased to hear of programs within the humanities, and that was through the College of Education. Professor Mark Van Overbeek gave an overview of several of the programs, and his colleague, Professor Paul Wright, focused on specific work being conducted within the College of Education. Although not reported verbally, I would like to mention that sponsored research in the second quarter of FY16 is on par with FY15 and included 33 awards totaling $7.5 million. That concludes my report, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I chair the Ad Hoc Committee on Enrollment. My colleagues received the unapproved copy of the minutes of that meeting, but for the benefit of the rest of you in the audience, I'll report that the Ad Hoc Committee on Enrollment met on February 4th, and in summary, we received reports on the 2016 spring semester 10th day enrollment, an update on the fall 2016 recruitment initiative, and a report on new and special projects. There were calls for additional information showing which recruitment and retention initiatives have been successful, metrics showing historical trends and a comparison to peer institutions, and information regarding graduate transfer and off-campus student recruitment and retention. We don't have a meeting date scheduled for the Ad Hoc Committee yet, but the hope is that we'll manage to get that together at some point in April. And that concludes my report. Trustee Butler, you chair the Ad Hoc Committee on Governance. Is there a report?
Yes, there is, and the committee's met twice since our last meeting, so I'll have a little bit more to say than usual. Since this board's last regular meeting, the Ad Hoc Committee on Governance met on December 17th, where we considered a presentation on Section 5, Subsection B2A of the Board Rules and Regulations, where one finds rules concerning the circumstances under which the university is authorized to conduct its own purchasing activities. Particularly of interest was the area of commodities bid through the Public Higher Education Cooperative, or IPEC. What specifically was included in this category was discussed in response to the committee's inquiries into the types of purchases the university was authorized to conduct without having to bring those purchases before the board. On that day, the committee also reviewed and took action on a proposed disclosure of interest policy, what we have previously referred to as a conflict of interest policy, and a proposed administrative leave policy. Today, we are receiving the committee's recommendation in both respects. The committee requested some alterations to the disclosure of interest policy and moved that it be presented today for board action, and you'll see it on our agenda as item 10B. The committee determined that an administrative leave policy should be developed at the university level and agreed on some parameters for that policy, which we recommend for board action today as an agenda item 10A. In addition to these two action items, the committee heard a report from Greg Long, the Faculty Senate President and Executive Secretary of the University Council, on a process for constitutional assessment and potential reform being undertaken by Dr. Long and his colleagues on the University Council. The committee expressed support for these efforts. Finally, we postponed discussion of a naming rights policy. At our meeting of February 4th, the committee considered proposed amendments to the board rules and regulations concerning university-level purchasing activity, ultimately recommending two amendments, which we have before us today in item 10C. One amendment discontinues the exemption of IPEC purchases from the Board of Trustees purchasing approval and clarifies specific areas where exemptions are warranted. Another amendment addresses a longstanding interest in adopting provisions governing procurement expenditures for sponsored research and other sponsored activities under grants and contracts to promote efficiency and timely project administration. I noted in the meeting, and I'll note again now, that in the board's action item on May 28, 2015, where we articulated areas the board wished to address with policy reform, we expressly mentioned provisions governing procurement expenditures for sponsored research and other sponsored activities under grants and contracts. And the amendment before us in this area carries this reform effort forward for action. On February 28th, the committee also received an update on the University Council's efforts to reform the university constitution. Dr. Long just reported on the change in voting thresholds related to bylaws, an important first step in this effort. The committee expressed our desire to continue our collaboration with Dr. Long and his UC colleagues, indicating that we believe the process is a comprehensive opportunity to align our several governance and policy documents, address duplications and barriers to curricular change, and other basic challenges. The committee also considered a bylaw proposal to a change concerning the manner in which vacancies in the student trustee position should be addressed. The committee's recommendation in that regard were adopted by the board at its special meeting of February 28, 2016, part of a sequence of events that led to the appointment of our new colleague, James Zanayad. The committee also postponed discussion of a naming rights policy for a second time and expressed our urgent desire to receive a university recommendation in that area as soon as possible. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Trustee Butler. President Baker, do you have a report on the Illinois Board of Higher Education?
I do. Thank you. Al Phillips and I attended the last board meeting in Chicago. At that time, Tom Cross was announced as the new executive director of the Illinois Board of Higher Education, replacing Lindsay Anderson, who's taken another job. A good deal of discussion was had about the legislative budget and its impact on the viability of some of the institutions, and in particular, the affordability and attainment gaps for underrepresented groups. Also at the meeting, the University of Illinois presented an overview of their new medical school that has a focus on technology and engineering merging with medicine and hands-on learning pedagogy. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Trustee Marshall serves as the board's representative to the Illinois Civil Service Merit Board. Do you have a report on that activity?
Yes, I do. Just before giving the update on our last meeting of the Merit Board, I also wanted to mention that on March the 3rd, the executive director of that particular merit board was able to come out to NIU and meet with staff in order to do some articulation on some of the current issues. I'm very happy to see him. Dealing with the last meeting of the merit board, it was reorganization time when we elected new officers. And just to name those folks and their positions, James Montgomery is the re-elected chair. Karen Hasera is the re-elected vice chair. And then Mr. Cole and Mitchell were the executive committee members elected to new terms. We held three discharge hearings that were completed for two employees from the University of Illinois at Chicago and one from the State University's retirement system. For many who are not familiar with the Merit Board, in addition to the State University's system, we also cover a number of state agencies that include the Community College Board, the Illinois Board of Higher Ed, CSRS, the retirement unit, and others. On a biennial audit program, on reviewing some of the recent activities, it was reported that the final audit reports had been completed and sent out with no findings being reported for the Illinois Board of Higher Ed, the Illinois Community College Board, and the Department of Specialized Care for Children. Dealing with a report from the Human Resources Directors Advisory Council, the Merit Board heard the report from Maureen Park's representative, and there was a very good report that also mentioned joint efforts with the Employee Advisory Committee and the Human Resources Group. They held a meeting earlier in January, and apparently a lot of progress on making some things happen did occur. Now, that partner group that they met with, the Employee Advisory Committee, is chaired by the newly reelected Andy Small from NIU. And on that series of reports, again, congratulatory work for working with other units to move things forward. Updates on proposed rulemaking. We've had discussions before on what does this rule of three mean. They had it as a rule for the Merit Board, but the state legislature has stepped in, and it is now a statute which takes precedent over any rule that would be published by the Merit Board. And as I understand it, basically the three top scores on a register would be working with candidates coming in with any of those top three scores. In the past, it's my understanding, if someone scored 98 and then the next one was 97 and then 96, you had a total of three people to interview. My understanding now is that if several people score in any one of the top three, you could have a larger pool that I won't say could be 9 or 10, but could certainly be more than three. There was a legal counsel report. Our executive director updated the Merit Board, and there have been 33 written charges against people for purposes of discharge. And apparently, nine employees out of that group of 33 have requested an appeal hearing before the Merit Board. That does conclude my report. Thank you.
Thank you. I understand that President Baker is going to have the report for the Foundation and the Alumni Association. I don't know whether that's a combined report or separate reports, but if you could proceed with both.
Thank you. Approximately 2 weeks ago, both the Foundation alumni met in separate meetings. The Foundation Board had a good deal of good news. There were very strong results through February of this year for their annual fundraising. As of February, they'd raised $15.6 million, 78% of the way toward their $20 million goal, and they're anticipating meeting or exceeding that goal. So good progress there. A number of key gifts were noted, a $1 million gift from Doug and Cindy Crocker to support the Crocker Scholarship Program in the College of Business, another $1 million gift in cash from the Give Something Back Foundation to fund 50 students from disadvantaged backgrounds, and a $2.75 million plan gift for the College of Engineering. So good progress being made there. A number of structural issues were also discussed, as well as personnel. One notable election was that Jeff Yordan was chosen to be the Foundation Board Chairman beginning July 1st, replacing Dennis Barsima at the end of his term. So we thank Dennis for his excellent service, and we'll do that formally as July approaches and welcome Jeff on board in that new role. The board approved goals for fiscal year 17, and of note, the foundation will begin this fiscal year developing a pre-campaign plan in conjunction with the university, the post-program prioritization priorities that emerge, and as well as university-wide dialogues. Catherine Squires noted she'd be pleased to make a presentation to this board on those activities as we move forward. I spoke about the ongoing budget stalemate in Springfield, and we discussed its implications for the university. And then we had two sets of outstanding presentations by students. One set of students were those who went to Mexico during the holiday season and spent time in a leadership academy. If you want to read more about it, it's on our front page this week. Really an amazing story with a huge impact on those students. Another group that presented was the investment class from the College of Business. They manage a piece of the portfolio for the university foundation and do an outstanding job with it. Gina Nicolosi is the faculty advisor for that group and does a great job with the students. And one of the students, Franz Varga, had the highest score in the world in the Bloomberg Aptitude Test on business and finance. So I think we're in good hands with those students, and she's doing an outstanding job with those students. So great presentations from them, and it was the hands-on learning experiences and internships right in front of us, and it was wonderful to see. The Alumni Association met the next day, and I also spoke there about the ongoing budget stalemate and its implications. The Alumni Association has taken on a strategic assessment, a self-evaluation. They've got more than 1,000 data points from interviews and surveys conducted by board members, and their goals are to better understand how to engage alumni, develop plans and programs to encourage connections and engagement, and also to ensure the association's providing support and activities and promotions of NIU. A variety of people have been interviewed, including board members, university senior leadership, academic deans, current Alumni Association members, past board members, community leaders, foundation leaders, et cetera. So I think they're well along the way to having a really good, thorough assessment of the Alumni Association and collecting data on how they can strategically move forward in the future. Thank you.
Thank you for that report. I also understand Vice President Blasey is not here this morning. Provost Freeman is going to be providing us with a report on the Northern Illinois Research Foundation.
Thank you, Trustee Strauss. Vice President Blasey is participating in a project review for the National Science Foundation in Washington, D.C., and he sends his regrets. I was at the Northern Illinois Research Foundation board meeting, so I'm very comfortable providing this report. Last week, the Northern Illinois Research Foundation held their quarterly meeting at our Hoffman Estates campus. The agenda included considerable policy housekeeping, with the board considering an audit committee charter, as well as policies related to accounting, protection of whistleblowers, and records retention. These policies are a part of a deliberate campaign that reflects a continued commitment to improve operations of the Research Foundation. The board also reviewed procedures under development by the Office of Innovation for selection of patents for prosecution. These procedures will help the staff select patents in an objective manner during difficult financial conditions. The board also heard an update on intellectual property developments in calendar year 2016. These included 30 pending patents and 3 awarded patents. The next meeting of the Northern Illinois Research Foundation is June 2016. That concludes my report.
Thank you. The next order of business will be consideration of the items previously moved to the consent agenda, namely University Recommendations 9A1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15, and University Reports 9B1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 11, 12, and 13. Can I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, please?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. We'll now consider the President's Report number 104. I believe the first item for business, then, Dr. Baker, is 9A2 in your report.
Correct. Thank you. 9A2 is Architectural and Engineering Plant Open Orders Contract Renewals. We request permission to issue open orders for labor and materials required for fiscal year 17 for electrical contractors, a general contractor, and an excavation road parking lot contractor. Services will be requested only on an as-needed basis through the fiscal year. Elliott Wood, Inc. was added for this coming fiscal year due to added anticipated projects. This is the first year of 9 one-year contract renewal options based on a bid that was opened in May 28, 2015. The renewal awards will be advertised in the Illinois Procurement Bulletin. And so we request approval of the expenditure authority not to exceed the $2,025,000 limit.
Is there a motion to that effect?
Move.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? We'll need a roll call vote on this, please.
Trustee Robert Boy?
Yes.
Trustee Wheeler Coleman?
Yes.
Trustee Robert Marshall?
Yes.
Trustee Sherlyn Muir?
Yes.
Trustee Tim Struthers?
Yes.
Trustee James Zanayed? Vice Chair John Butler?
Yes.
Board Chair Mark Strauss?
Abstain. That motion carries. Item 9A10.
Yes, thank you. 9A10 is the student insurance health fee. The university provides group health insurance to our students, and students may waive their participation in this plan if they approve of other comparable health care insurance coverage. The insurance fee rate for the next year was not available at our last board, and so we have now done the RFP and are requesting that we be given approval to not exceed the amount of $1,045 per semester. The bid will be done through a competitive process. We have those bids in. The review is being finalized, and the renewal rates will change based on our claims history and prior years of experience in the past. So the university does request the board approval for the fiscal year 2017 health insurance fees not to exceed $1,045 per semester. Staff will provide the board with information regarding the student health insurance fee once the process is completed and the final vendor coverage option selected.
You have a motion to that effect, please?
Move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? Yes, Trustee Marshall.
Actually, just wanted to find out how many bids.
I think we had four bids. Four bids.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other discussion? Trustee Coleman, do we need a roll call on this?
Why don't we do so?
So roll call, please.
Trustee Robert Boy?
Yes.
Trustee Wheeler Coleman?
Yes.
Trustee Robert Marshall?
Yes.
Trustee Sherlyn Muir?
Yes.
Trustee Tim Struthers?
Yes.
Trustee James Zanayed?
Yes.
Vice Chair John Butler? Board Chair Mark Strauss.
9A16.
Thank you. This is the Lucinda Avenue Realignment Capital Project. We discussed this in our committee meeting. In early 2004, we received the allocation of a substantial Department of Transportation highway grant for the construction of property on the West Campus. That grant was over $8 million. The Far West Road projects are complete, and there's a remaining balance of $233,861 in the grant fund. The legislative language when the initial appropriation was made limited the use of these funds to road improvements, specifically on NIU's West Campus. To avoid risk of using these funds and having them withdrawn, we presented two options on the Lucinda Extension and Recreation Drive at the West Stadium Drive intersection to the Department of Transportation, and the second was to repave Recreation Drive. The proposed projects were submitted to DOT, and approval was granted for the Lucinda Avenue extension alignment. So if we're going to use this money, we believe, based on the DOT approval, we need to spend it on that section of road. So Al, I think your team, since we initially did this at the board meeting, has come up with some re-engineering estimates on it. And could you talk a little bit about that?
Certainly. We went back and took a look at all of the numbers. The original estimate was done in December of 2014. The conceptual estimate for the project was $550,000 with a 20% contingency. When we actually go to the design effort, we anticipate the contingency will be cut to 10% through competitive bidding and the expected lower cost of the asphalt. We believe that we will be able to reduce another 10%, which would reduce the cost of the project to $440,000. In that case, federal funding piece would be $233,000 or 53% of the project. NIU's share would be $207,000 or less than half the cost of the project. So this would allow us to finish this at less than half of the cost of what it would do if we did not have the federal funding. As President Baker said, if we do not use the federal funding, then we will lose it.
The recommendation is that for approval to establish a project budget, and we still have $550,000 here since it was in the document, so I guess we would say not to exceed, but we would anticipate it would be at least $100,000 less than that, and begin the project in fiscal year 16 by engaging QBS and selected architectural engineering firm for the planning, design, and preparation of construction documents and specifications for bidding the work. The university further requests approval to establish a phased construction sequence over two or more fiscal years to implement the project as funding is available and time is available. The university will provide the board with periodic updates on the progress of the project.
Can I have a motion to that effect?
Move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? Trustee Struthers first.
Yeah, so I'm struggling surely with the total cost, and I look at this very practically, that if we had a pile of money, irrespective of it's our money, the state's money, or the federal government's money, is this the best use of those dollars? And given the incredible headwinds of our state economy and the university economy today, I just struggle with that. I went out and looked at the physical project, and while there's concern with the safety of the bus alignments and that sort of thing, I get it. But I really struggle with the priority of this. I like the fact that the number, when 550, I look at that, I can't for the life of me understand how it could cost $550,000 to realign the road. So I like the fact that after further review, that was a high estimate, and it indeed may come in much lower. I feel pretty uncomfortable about making any kind of a vote that would have a 550 number attached to it. I don't know the protocol for putting that cap on that. But I would feel a whole lot better about it should that number be in total, say, at 400 or such, of which then the university portion would be in the high 100s. So I wanted to add those comments to the consideration.
Trustee Coleman.
Yeah, Al, I really have got a question for you, and I know we spent time in committee talking about this. We've probably spent a lot of time talking about this particular project in itself, but the use of the funds. And there's two types of funds, my understanding, that we're tapping into, the bond series 2010 fund. Can you explain the general use again of that fund? And then I understand the federal highway grant fund, that for the most part cannot be used for, I guess, fixing buildings or giving raises and that kind of stuff. So for both of the funds that we're tapping into here, please explain the type of usage associated with those funds.
The federal funds are very specifically, in this case, tied to a project, and the language stipulates what those can be used for and how much leeway you have. In this case, we had to submit a request to use the funds for potential projects, and so these additional funds were specifically approved for this particular project, so that limits specifically the use of that money to this particular project, because we had to request approval to spend the funds on this. In terms of bond funds, generally bond funds by definition are funds that we borrow. And generally, they have to be used for typically auxiliary purposes or purposes that in some way, shape, or form generate funding necessary to pay off the bonds. Generally, you see those, probably the best example would be student housing, where we borrow money to build housing. The student fees cover the costs of paying off the bonds. We do use them for other facilities, such as the Convocation Center that generates funding. Even the parking lots generate funding through parking fees. This particular project was funded as a, I believe, a part of this effort. And the Lucinda, the Lucinda Road was funded through the use of these funds and that whole project. This is a piece that was left out of that. And so since the 2010 bond funds were used for the Lucinda Avenue extension, it was our decision to use those funds also for this piece of the project.
Trustee Muir.
I feel like in a row. So in keeping with the genre of the discussion thus far, and again, for just to assure clarity, first of all, these are restricted funds. That's what you've just said, correct?
You cannot use them.
Restricted for physical
Typically, bond funds are used for construction-type projects. Okay. So they cannot be used for other, like payroll.
I think this board is very sensitive and appreciative of the comments made by a faculty member and the community at large that sees money as one would look at their own budget and with discretion to move monies around. And I want to be very clear about this. These are not funds that, it's my understanding,
correct.
And please correct me, but these funds cannot and would not be able to be used for other purposes, operational purposes of the university. That is correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Okay. And so if we don't use these funds that are available both from bonds and from federal grant, then those monies will be lost.
The bond funds, the federal grant money we will lose. The bond funds we will still have and can use those for other projects. However, through the use of our funds, we would only be paying for 50% of the cost of the project, which is why we were pursuing this. If we were doing this all with our own money, it would cost us twice as much as the cost to NIU is projected to be.
And in keeping with the question posed by Trustee Struthers, is it the opinion of the president and the chief financial officer that the completion of this project is the most prudent use of those bond funds?
I think, thank you, very good question. I think given that this is a dangerous intersection and at some point needs to be done and that we've got federal money to help us complete it at this time, it seems prudent to put those two pieces of money together and get the project done rather than come back in a few years and have to have double the cost and whatever increase there is from construction costs over that period. So we do think it's a good investment at this time.
Thank you.
Trustee Zanetti.
I too struggle with the perception that we're saying that we do not have money for certain things with the state budget crisis, and now we're going to go spend this kind of money realigning a road. But I also do understand that this is what this money is for. It's for construction, and there's a bond. I think that we need to combat the perception of the idea of wasting money, especially with the students. I've heard students talk about this project and are kind of asking questions why. If we're going to talk about the budget all the time, why are we spending money on realigning a road? Now, I believe, like I said, there's good reason to straighten out this road now, but we need to have a good public relations idea in telling the community that that's something we need to do and why we need to do it.
Trustee Struthers.
I have one more comment. So I look at the need for the realignment, right, and I'm, again, somewhat dumbfounded by the fact of why that happened in the first place, why the engineering firms didn't catch that alignment miss at the beginning. So with that, again, I'd like to, I'm not sure of the protocol, but the idea of I would prefer strongly that the engineer that was involved in that original project and the contractors involved in that original project are excluded from the winning of this next piece, should we move forward. I don't know if that can be in an amended motion, but...
You've asked about the appropriate protocol for two different potential amendments.
Yes.
You have the capacity to make a motion for an amendment for any purpose. The two that you've mentioned or any other. If you'd like to make a motion to amend, then we'll take that up for consideration by the board.
Can I make that two amendments?
Absolutely.
So I would move to amend the motion to put a cap of a total of $440,000 and a limitation that the engineer and architect involved and or architect involved in the original design would be excluded from the work in the next phase.
So I have a motion to amend. Is there a second?
Did you want the two separate ones?
It's fine. Can I have a second for that motion?
I'll second it.
All right. Is there discussion on the motion to amend? Trustee Muir.
Yeah. I have a question on that thought process, because if the road, and this is certainly not my area of expertise on road construction, but if the road is not aligned, I'm wondering if there has been discussion with the engineer and the contractor to determine why it was not aligned, and has there been any discussion of how to mitigate a situation? Was there any negligence? So I don't know where our legal counsel is in this. Was there any negligence on this? And if there was no negligence, has there been any consideration given by the group that initially established the road to fix to fix the problems that we now have? So my comment here is I'm not anxious to immediately vote to discount the original engineer and contractor, only because I don't know if there are, what their role was, and also could that be more useful to NIU in terms of trying to get some level of consideration that would be less than someone coming in de novo to such a project.
Is there anybody who would like to take a crack at answering Trustee Muir's questions?
Tom? Good question.
Tom, if you could identify yourself for the recording, too, please.
Tom Robleski, Director of Architectural Engineering Services, and thank you for the questions. I appreciate the opportunity to address the board. excuse me. The roadway that's to the north of the Convocation Center was intended for the Convocation Center, and because there was never any discussion or thoughts about trying to connect Lucinda to the recreation building by way of taking down Douglas, excuse me, the road was never aligned to begin with. So the road that was built for the Convocation Center was built 35 feet further north than Lucinda Avenue that's in campus. By taking down Douglas and extending the road to the west, the two roads don't align when we reach the Stadium West driveway or road. The engineers proposed aligning it, but it would have taken off the front door of Stevenson South. So we would have had no entrance into Stevenson South dormitories if we would have aligned the road by making the curve in front of Stevenson. So we felt it was prudent to go forward with a straight road and realign that section further west of Stevenson Towers.
Trustee Boy, if it's okay, let me let Trustee Muir follow up first, and then I'll come back to you.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. I think that this is a very important comment, and I just again want to reiterate. So what you're saying is that the original engineer contractor addressed this issue, proposed a solution to the client, to NIU. The client at the time, because there was a building in the middle, decided that that recommendation would not be followed to align the roads, and that we had some type of detour or an unalignment of the roads. But what I've just heard you say is that the original architect, engineer, and contractor did address the issue, recognized it, addressed it, proposed it, client decided not to move forward with that, and now because we have different circumstances and we took down a building, that's why we're looking to alignment.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Actually, we wanted to do the entire project together, but didn't have the wherewithal to get the federal funds in place as we started the work of construction.
Okay. But it was the client's decision.
It was our decision.
Yep.
It didn't make sense to not have a south entrance into Stevenson.
Yep.
We didn't have money to add another entrance. So it was just decided that rather than having a dangerous existing exit or entrance into Stevenson that would exit right out onto the street, we would move the street. Basically, the street is aligned with all of the rest of Lucinda through town.
Okay.
Up to
Trustee Bush.
Yeah, as I remember it, there was never a consideration of demolishing Douglas at that time.
And correct.
That was the main issue.
Correct.
And then we decided in our brainchild afterwards that let's take down Douglas. Well, there's the problem right there. So I don't quite understand why there's so much confusion.
Well,
thank you, Tom.
Other comments?
Maybe I'm missing something here, but it wasn't that this road goes right through where the middle of Douglas was, correct? So the road could have never been envisioned or imagined without Douglas Hall being demolished, right? I mean, so this road was only conceived after Douglas was
demolished. Well, no, the road was conceived as we made plans to take down Douglas.
But it was only in the context of Douglas being demolished because it runs right through the middle of Douglas Hall.
That's correct. Yeah.
So I'm not tracking that.
Okay.
So the road couldn't be shifted over to align with the one at the going to the Convocation Center because it would have taken out the entrance to Stevenson. It had to stay where it is so that that would be safe so that the students could come out of the building.
Right.
So that gets you to that stop sign. And then the plan was to make this curve to do the alignment that's proposed here. But because of the timing of the federal funding at that time, it couldn't all have been tied into the project.
Okay.
Trustee Butler.
Tom, what would the impact of the motion be from the architect and engineering side? Is it current plans to use the same firms, or have they already done the design work? Is this just a matter now of the approval of the funds to actually do the construction?
We needed permission from the board to even begin the work with IDOT. So we have not spent any money, except that the engineer that we had for the original section of the road provided us with the estimate for the conceptual estimate that we're asking for approval of. So the answer is no, we haven't really started any work, and IDOT has informed us actually this week that we'll need to go through what's called the qualification-based selection. We'll need to go through and select an engineer to do the remaining portion of the work because IDOT will control, even though half of it is our funds, they're going to control the entire project.
Trustee Muir.
I would ask Trustee Struthers to perhaps consider the fact that if we had such a motion that specifically requested that we exempt and not include the original engineer, and given your response that they had identified the problem, provided a solution, client decided under good judgment not to move forward, that if it were in a public statement in a motion that is transcribed and available to the public, I would think that would reflect badly on that engineering firm and unnecessarily. unnecessarily. There's no reason for us. They should go through the motions and go through the process as normally as anyone else. And for us to have a motion to exclude them, I feel is deleterious to them unnecessarily.
Fair statement. One, let me clarify. Will the bid for the engineering be a competitive bid? Right. We'll put that out for a competitive bid.
If I may, yes, it would be. And it's also necessary to state that excluding a vendor would violate procurement rules, yeah. And we would not be allowed to do that.
So, Chair Strauss, can I amend my motion?
You can with the consent of the seconder, which I believe was Trustee Butler.
I'm ready.
All right. So in that case, before I get back to Trustee Boy, what we would have in front of us is a motion to amend to replace the $550,000 project budget with $440,000.
That is correct.
All right. Trustee Boy.
My memory is not perfect, but as I remember it, we made a decision to take down Douglas about 2 years ago. When did we build a communication center?
Tom?
92. So therein lies the problem. Yeah. We created our own problem, whether we like it or not, by taking down Douglas 2 years ago. So let's not blame it on anybody else except it was our decision 2 years ago.
Other discussion before we vote on the amendment? If not, all those in favor of the amendment?
Could you repeat the amendment?
The amendment is to substitute $440,000 for $550,000 in the recommendation in your printed material.
That's it.
That's it.
Okay.
I move.
No, I don't need a motion. I need a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Now we're back to the motion, main motion, as amended. And is there any further discussion on the main motion? If not, I'd like a roll call vote on this, please.
What happened to Trustee Struthers' motion? We're not looking to exclude. We're going back to what we have in front of us.
By consent of the maker and the seconder, removed from the amendment that we just voted on. So what we have now is the recommendation presented before you in writing with $550,000 stricken and $440,000 substituted. All right, roll call, please.
Trustee Robert Boy.
Yes.
Trustee Wheeler Coleman.
Yes.
Trustee Robert Marshall.
Yes.
Trustee Sherlyn Muir?
Yes.
Trustee Tim Struthers?
Yes.
Trustee James Zanayed?
Yes.
Vice Chair John Butler?
Yes.
Board Chair Mark Strauss?
For the same reasons I voted against this in the committee, I'll vote no today as well. That motion carries. Let's move on to 9B10, please.
Thank you. This is the state report. A lot's been going on. I'm sure you've all been following the election. Interesting set of elections. We've had a series of bills passed and a lot of activity underway last week and this week. And I'm asking Mike Mann to speak about that. Mike.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. There have been several major developments since I last spoke to the Legislative Affairs and Research Committee. If I may, I'd like to refer to page 70 of your materials so that I can update you on a couple of pieces of legislation we discussed in February, and then I would also update you on what's been happening this week. At our last committee meeting, I focused on three pieces of legislation, and I will update you. Senate Bill 2043 that we discussed at that meeting was the so-called higher education bill that contained no funding for public universities. It was dubbed the MAP bill, even though it included funding for MAP and community colleges. Since we last met, that bill was vetoed by the governor. The Senate overrode that veto, and then the House failed to override the governor's veto. So that bill has been stopped in its tracks. The other two pieces of legislation that I mentioned, House Bill 4539, which funded NIU at a 20% cut, and Senate Bill 2269, which funded NIU at FY15 appropriation levels, those are both still on first reading. They're not moving. However, 2 weeks ago, the House approved House Bill 2990, which would fund NIU at $85.2 million. It's a 6.5% reduction from our FY15 final appropriation. It's the same amount of funding that was proposed and vetoed for us last May. In fact, if you look at the table on page 71, and you look at the column that says vetoed, and you see for Northern the funding level of $85,171.7, that's the same level of funding that it's included currently in House Bill 2990. As I said, the House approved that 2 weeks ago. It has moved to the Senate. The language from that bill was cut and pasted into Senate Bill, cut and pasted into Senate Bill 2059, and included in a Senate Amendment 1. That measure was approved yesterday by the Appropriations 1 Committee. Today, I will be monitoring the situation the best I can, but there is the expectation that the Senate will act on that bill today. And again, that includes funding for several human service agencies, monetary award program at $397 million, and the public universities at the 6.5% cut. There are indications that the governor would very likely veto this measure, citing the lack of appropriate revenues to support this type of legislation. However, I would note that when this bill first passed the House, it received 70 votes on the initial vote, and if there were an override situation, it would only require 71 votes. So there are rumblings that this if this measure were vetoed, there might be enough will to override the veto in both the House and the Senate. Now, I would like to just note that the comptroller is currently sitting on 50,000 unpaid vouchers totaling about $7 billion. It doesn't seem fair that since we haven't that we're in the ninth month of the fiscal year without a budget, that we would have to justify a budget by identifying revenues to support funding that we desperately need. But that's kind of the situation we find ourselves in now. There has not been a lot of discussion about revenues, i.e. tax increases, but we are hearing that now that the primary elections have been held earlier this week, that the focus will be on a tax proposal of some sort. And it may at some point find ourselves in the position of being asked whether or not we support revenue increases to as a means of supporting a budget for higher education. And I think I'll stop there.
Charming place to stop. Questions or comments? Thank you for your report, then.
Thank you.
Shall we move on to the 9C items, then?
Yes.
Mr. President.
Thank you. On to something very positive. The honorary doctorate recommendations. We had two outstanding recommendations for the honorary doctorate. These are on page 78 of your book. Dr. James R. Fruchterman was nominated by Professor Galen Kaperman. Dr. Fruchterman is a world expert on literacy, human rights, and environmental sustainability. He's worked extensively in the disability and technology community, working with the blind, working to convert content of printed pages into audible text. He founded a non-for-profit, Benetech. Ventures under Benetech include Bookshop, which provides accessible books for individuals who have no access to printed materials, 3D modeling for an array of educational applications to enhance the educational experience for blind students. He's provided drinking water in South America through his organizations and used technical skills to help humanitarian organizations. He's well thought of, a visionary working with interdisciplinary solutions to complex issues. He's a MacArthur Fellow and is a model of innovation, social justice, and interdisciplinary problem solving. His nomination is also supported by Dean Lori Ellis Piper in the College of Education. So an excellent nominee, we believe. The second nominee is Dr. Eboo Patel, who actually lives in Chicago. He was nominated by the NIU Interfaith Committee. Dr. Patel has emerged as a leading authority on interfaith relationships in the United States. U.S. News and World Report named him as one of America's best leaders in 2009. He's the founder and president of the Interfaith Youth Corps, a Chicago-based organization building the field of interfaith leadership, particularly on college and university campuses. He's written a number of books. Our first year experience has used one of those books called Acts of Faith, and it's won a number of awards and was a very effective learning tool for 2 years with our first year experience. He's a columnist for the Washington Post, US Today, Huffington Post, NPR Sojourners, and the Chronicle of Higher Education, CNN. He's very well respected across the country. Dr. Patel served on President Obama's inaugural advisory council of the White House Office of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships and holds a doctoral degree from Oxford University, where he was a Rhodes Scholar. So we would recommend that both of these individuals be approved for honorary doctorates in humane letters.
Motion to that effect?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you. The next item is the appointment of two deans. And as you know, we've had four searches underway, education, business, visual and performing arts, and law. The first two to conclude are education and business. And I'm going to hand it over to Executive Vice President Provost Freeman, who's led these.
Thank you, President Baker, and I'm happy that I'm continuing the theme of feel-good items, because I think it's very important to recognize that despite the budget impasse, despite some of the morale issues, we are an excellent university, and we have the capability of attracting talent and excellent leadership to our academic colleges. The first item I'm going to speak to is item 9C2, the appointment of a dean for the College of Education. And I do want to point out that the two candidates I'm going to be talking about in these two items were unable to be here with us today. We'll have them address the board at a later time. So moving on to item 9C2, following a national search, Dr. Lori Ellis Piper has accepted an offer to be the dean of NIU's College of Education. Dr. Ellis Piper is well known to us. She's a distinguished teaching professor and presidential engagement professor in NIU's Department of Literacy and Elementary Education. She teaches graduate courses in literacy assessment and instruction, adult literacy and literacy research. She's the director of the Jerry Johns Literacy Clinic and co-director of the Center for Interdisciplinary Study of Language and Literacy. She has served as a presidential advisor and also as an acting deputy provost in her time at NIU. I want to point out that the feedback that I have gotten from the college and alumni of the college since this announcement was made publicly has just been astounding. I have heard from alumni, from cabinet members, from deans, from department heads, from faculty, from staff, and from students thanking me for helping them bring such an excellent leader to the College of Education, and thanking me for demonstrating that someone who has emerged as excellent as a teacher, scholar, and leader at NIU stacks up so positively in a national search. The recommendation to the board from the president is that Dr. Lori Ellis Piper be appointed dean of the College of Education effective July 1, 2016.
Have the motion to that effect, please. Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, moving on to agenda item 9C3, the appointment of a dean for the College of Business. Following a national search, Dr. Balaji Rajagopalan has accepted an offer to be the dean of the NIU College of Business. He's recommended for the appointment at the rank of professor with tenure in the Department of Operations Management and Information Systems. Dr. Rajagopalan is the current head of the Black School of Business at Penn State University campus at Behrend. As a leader of that school, he has oversight for an operational budget of approximately $19 million, an endowment of approximately $33 million, supporting 5 endowed chairs, student scholarships, and accreditation by the AACSB. Some of the accomplishments that led the search committee on the campus to overwhelmingly support Dr. Rajagopalan as the first choice to be the dean of the College of Business was his history of strategically positioning the MBA at Penn State as a hybrid delivery program, his documented history of strengthening collaboration with the schools of engineering and business to grow interdisciplinary studies majors, and his history of hiring outstanding faculty from top-tier university while also increasing diversity, noting that 70% of the faculty he hired at Penn State increased the diversity of the College of Business. I am pleased to recommend this excellent candidate by forwarding the president's recommendation that Dr. Balaji Rajagopalan be appointed the dean of the College of Business with rank of professor with tenure in the Department of Operations Management and Information Systems, effective July 1, 2016.
Thank you. Can I have a motion, please? Second? Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Trustee Freeman, please carry back to the chairs and the members of that committee our thanks for their service. I've witnessed a number of these operations now, and I know how much time and effort is devoted, so I would appreciate it if you'd let people know that we do appreciate the time and effort that, and attention to detail involved in this.
And if I may, I would like to thank the trustees who took time from their busy schedules to have dinner with the candidates when they were on campus, and I know that we have trustees lined up to continue that as we interview candidates for the other positions.
All right. That concludes your portion of the report, Dr. Baker.
Thank you.
All right, I'm carrying three items today. Trustee Butler, in his report on the activities of the Ad Hoc Committee on Governance, spent quite a bit of time speaking to the detail of the three proposed items that I'm going to bring to you today, the first of which is the proposed administrative leave policy, item 10A on the agenda. Can I have a motion to approve that policy, please? Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion.
There was one issue I would like to address, which is the original committee discussion included a desire for this motion to include a clause that indicated the board reserves the right to approve the policy as appropriate. This is a university-level policy that we are asking the university to create, but I wanted to see if I can amend the motion to add at the end of the number two, perhaps a semicolon, the board reserves the right to approve the policy as appropriate, which would mean that if there were a significant role for the board in the execution of the policy, we would formally be asked to approve the policy. Or we would at least see it and have the right to have some discussion and possibly change the policy.
Since that was my request at the committee, I appreciate your bringing that to our attention. So I can take that as a motion for an amendment.
That is a motion.
All right. Is there a second for the amendment?
Second.
All right. Discussion on the amendment. Trustee Muir.
No, not on the amendment.
All right.
Sorry.
Any other discussion on the amendment?
Can you repeat the amendment, please?
The amendment would perhaps a semicolon at the end of university in number two. It would add the board reserves the right to approve the policy as appropriate.
Thank you.
All those in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. The amendment is approved. Now we'll return to the main motion. Any discussion on the main motion? Trustee Muir.
I just wanted to make note to commend Trustee Butler on what appears to be a significant body of work and all of those who were involved in addressing these issues. It is really important that this structure is clearly identified in writing in a policy, and that policy has been reviewed as timely as we are doing it now. So I just wanted to make note that this is very important. I also agree with the amendment that the board should have that final responsibility to make any amendments. But this is very timely. It's substantive. I imagine it reflects great thought and input by many. And I think this is a move in the right direction for us.
Any other discussion?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that this is largely the work of the Office of the Office of the General Counsel and the President's Cabinet. There was a lot of thought that went into this. The committee made very little change to this, but I very much appreciated the extremely significant and substantial discussion that we had on this issue.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The next item, 10B, is a proposed disclosure of interest bylaw amendment. And the recommendation here is a little more complicated, only due to the fact that the process that we have for amending bylaws has a requirement in it that the writing be presented to the board 3 days in advance of the meeting. And in this case, the wheels of justice spun slowly, and the amendment did not get out 3 days before. So that has led to the recommendation, which is that the university requests approval from the full board of trustees for the first reading of the proposed disclosure of interest bylaw amendment, suspension of the bylaws by an affirmative vote of 6 members of the full board pursuant to Article 10 of the bylaws in order to have the second reading and final approval of the proposed disclosure of interest bylaw amendment at the March 17, 2016 board meeting, approval for the elimination of the board's separate conflict of interest policy, and delegation of authority to the president for the creation and implementation of an appropriate disclosure of interest policy for persons not covered by the proposed bylaw amendment. The activity behind the preparation of this recommendation arched over several meetings of the Ad Hoc Committee on Governance, engendered considerable discussion, and the minutes of those meetings was timely provided to the members of this board. So the contents should come as no surprise, although I don't foredeign that the board will see fit to waive the second reading. But I wanted to make explicit the full nature of what you're being asked to consider today. So can I have a motion consistent with the recommendation to take those actions?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion on the motion? If not, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. So the last item is proposed amendments to board regulations related to commodities and sponsored projects authorization levels. This matter also has received considerable discussion and numerous changes before the Ad Hoc Committee on Governance. Minutes of those have been provided on subsequent occasions as well. The recommendation is that given that this matter has been thoroughly discussed by the Ad Hoc Committee on Governance and that immediate action on this matter poses no harm to the university, but to the contrary clarifies purchasing exemption guidelines and strengthens the university's ability to successfully pursue sponsored research and grant opportunities, the university seeks board approval of the proposed revisions to the board regulations as detailed in the printed item furnished to you. University also requests that the board suspend the regulations requirement to post notice of the intention to amend the regulations at least 3 days prior to a meeting. Can I have a motion to that effect, please?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion on the motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. So the board needs to go into closed session now. May I have a motion to close the public meeting to conduct a closed session to discuss the following subjects authorized by the Illinois Open Meeting Act. Personnel matters is generally described under sections 2C, 1, 2, 3, and 21 of the Open Meetings Act. collective bargaining matters as generally described under Section 2C2 of the Open Meetings Act, litigation and risk management matters as generally described under Sections 2C11 and 12 of the Open Meetings Act. Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? Need a roll call, please.
Trustee Robert Boy?
Yes.
Trustee Wheeler Coleman?
Yes.
Trustee Robert Marshall?
Yes.
Trustee Sherilyn Muir?
Yes.
Trustee Tim Struthers?
Yes.
Trustee James Zayed?
Yes.
I said it wrong again. John Butler? Trustee John Butler?
Yes.
Board Chair Mark Strauss?
Yes. So the motion is approved. The meeting is now closed. To give you some idea of what will happen from here, I expect that it'll be a minimum of an hour and a half that will be in closed session. It may be longer. At some point, the board will return, and it is possible that we will consider agenda item 12C4. It's also possible there'll be no further consideration of any item upon our return. In any event, we will at some point return to close the open portion of this meeting. I understand that there's a protocol involved to give people notice who desire it of the time that we are about to come back. That protocol, Mr. Mann, will be implemented, I assume.
Yes.
For those of you who have nothing better to do today and want to sit here and wait for us, you're welcome to do so. We're now adjourned.